Today on Movie Rollers, we talk about Certain Women, Jack Reacher, and Hacksaw Ridge. Time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yasti as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Got that little post-chili euphoria. Yasti shared some of his homemade gaur curry. Is that how you say it?
Gaur curry, yes.
It's that delicious, sweet, chutney, pickle,
spicy. Yes,
thing that you get with Indian food. Normally, I always associate it with papadums for some reason.
You could. It goes well with papads. Yes, papadums.
But it was really spicy.
It's good. Yes, this one was because it's homemade. Yeah.
It's delicious, but I haven't had spicy food for a while, so I'm getting that little post-chili buzz. Do you ever get that?
Mm-mm, no. What do you mean by buzzed? Like a...
I get buzzed.
It goes to your head?
I totally do.
Wow.
Like an endorphin release.
It really is. It's just a general feeling of well-being.
Wow.
I know.
Maybe. I should have had some then.
Oh, you didn't have any?
No, I can't do spicy food these days.
Oh, okay. It's aging.
Aging is horrible.
Aging is horrible.
It's like everything starts to break.
And yes.
All the things that you used to enjoy. My big thing with aging is height.
Aging what?
It's height. I used to be very tolerant of height, being up in high places, and now I just get like queasy. It's something that happened in my mid-30s, but I get really nervous on like high bridges and.
But you go hiking all the time,
right? But I stay on solid footing. I got myself stuck. I had an issue when I was in LA about a year ago. I hiked to this place and then I couldn't figure out how to get down because it was steep sides both sides,
right.
And I literally had to sit down for 10-15 minutes thinking they're gonna have to helicopter me out of here. Like, I'm this is it, I'm done, this is like where I end, this is the spot where I am.
That's Joe the movie.
By the Hollywood sign.
And it was like, get over yourself, because then this, like, you know, 85-year-old man comes bounding by and I'm like, oh, I guess it isn't so scary enough. And then there was like a 7-year-old
kid. He's so close to death.
Like, oh,
he doesn't care.
Matter, yeah. Right?
So I had to like pick myself up.
But. And you couldn't call anyone? And tell them what?
Well, Rashmi was getting her hair done and she wasn't going to hike up there and like walk me down. That's not going to happen. But it's
See, that's what happens when you age together. You know the other person really well.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, she's like, yeah, that's it. You're done.
See ya.
Where's the insurance policy?
Cashing in the life policy.
Yeah.
Give me the passwords to the bank account.
That's right.
I know how it works. All right, so yes, but movies, on the other hand, we continue to enjoy more and more as we age.
Yes.
Safety.
Even more so.
Safe entertainment. And so we have three of them this week. So once again, we're going to skip on Netflix picks. We will be back hopefully next time. There's a ton of stuff cropping up. Sorry, it's not that there's a dearth of stuff. Just dig through your queue. But really, this time of year, everyone needs to be out in the theaters. So, you know, Netflix is what you do if you are, you know, incapacitated in some way. But otherwise, get your butt out to the movie theaters because there's tons.
Or even Amazon Prime.
Yeah, right.
Amazon Prime has a great selection of movies at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, there's some really good films in theaters right now,
for sure.
Yeah, so people need to check them out.
How about our three for this week? Let's see if they're worth going to.
Yes.
So where should we start? Certain Women, Jack Reacher, or Hacksaw Ridge?
Jack Reacher.
Okay, and I think I'm the one introing that. So this is kind of an interesting movie in that the first Jack Reacher came and went without a lot of fanfare. I didn't actually get to see it, and I'm kind of bummed because I've been looking for it to crop up on one of the streaming services and haven't seen it. So and it's one that I've actually physically looked for a couple of times. So it's obviously got its fan base because I think the studios are opting to not release it on streaming, which generally is a good sign of a movie that they can get revenue by people paying for it.
I know it's got quite an afterlife in that people have gone back, and I've had many people come back and say, oh, that Jack Reacher is actually very good.
And I didn't realize it's a series of like 25 books or something.
Written by Lee Child, who's very popular. Yeah.
So this comes to us from director Edward Zwick, who has been around for a while, directed things such as Glory back in the day. And more recently, he did a movie that we all quite liked, Pawn Sacrifice, the chess movie with Tobey Maguire. But here he is with Tom Cruise with in the movie Jack Reacher. And there's very little description of it here on Rotten Tomatoes, so I'll just read through it, which is: Tom Cruise returns as Jack Reacher in the sequel based on Lee Child's best-selling novel Never Go Back, which finds the itinerant problem solver accused of murder and learning that he may have a child that he has never met. So, again, pretty good cast in this one. Tom Cruise, obviously, is the headline. We have Kobe Smulders as Susan Turner. And I'm trying to think if there are any other kind of bigger names here. We have Danica Yarosh and all the people I'm not too familiar with. But guys, what did you think of Jack Reacher?
So I haven't read the books by Lee Child, and I haven't gotten a chance, although I really wanted to watch the original Jack Reacher movie, which I think was directed by Christopher McQuarrie, who Tom Cruise went on to work on Oblivion, a movie that all of us liked a lot. And like I said, a lot of people have told me that the original Jack Reacher movie is very good. And I think the reason why this character is so popular is because, you know, he's essentially somebody who's kind of very stoic, and he's given up on life, and he doesn't believe in earthly possessions, and he literally, he's a nomad. He doesn't have a house, and he just literally has a toothbrush with him. That's all he carries with him. And he kind of goes around, gets involved with, you know, all manner of criminal activities which he tries to solve. So it's kind of a fascinating character, and it's curious that, you know, I know there was a lot of backlash when Tom Cruise was originally picked for this role, because, you know, as is written in the book, it's supposed to be a very lanky, tall, skinny person, and, you know,
Cruise
is none of those things. So I was really looking forward to this one, especially because Edward Zwick, I mean, Cruise is very selective with his material, and he's even more selective with his directors. He always aligns himself with very, very good directors, which kind of, you know, almost guarantee the quality of the product. And Edward Zwick, as you've said, has made Glory. He made Legends of the Fall. I mean, he's made these big, grand movies. And it was interesting to see how he would take on kind of a more routine action thriller. And through the first half an hour of the movie, I liked how low-key the movie was, in terms of it didn't want to make a big deal about it. It wasn't into big drama. It was all very low-key. But then it kind of continued to a low-keel pace, and it kind of became very, very ordinary. And that's a horrible thing to say to a movie, but it just seemed very ordinary, very middle of the road. And to be honest, we saw it last week, and I'm straining right now to remember even two scenes from that movie. So it's a failed effort, unfortunately, and I'm shocked that Edward Zwick was behind this, because he should have somehow taken this material and made it memorable in some way.
Rashmi, I see you kind of agreeing there, gesturing agreement with Yasti.
Okay, so I'm going to come clean. I totally mixed up Jack Reacher with Night and Day, and only when I started thinking about this review that I realized I hadn't even seen the first Jack Reacher, because I was convinced I had seen Jack Reacher, but I'd seen Night and Day.
Which is so a much better movie.
Yeah, so I spent the entire movie a little confused, to say the least. But, okay, in my defense, I think that's a consequence of a number of Tom Cruise's characters now totally merging. So we have Jack Reacher, Roy Miller from Night and Day, Ethan Hunt from Mission Impossible. And Jack Reacher himself isn't a million miles from Jason Bourne in terms of military men who are no longer part of the military, who are trying to put things right. And even James Bond, the new James Bond in some ways. So with that rant over, I didn't hate this movie. It was yet another high-energy chase action sequence with many men in black who serve as disposable henchmen. Yeah.
So in our last podcast, in our last podcast, we reviewed The Accountant, and it's interesting in the fact that I think those two movies, this one and The Accountant, have kind of blended for me, in the sense of they are, you know, strong, kind of socially awkward, perhaps, protagonists dealing with, you know, situations that are, you know, well out of control. I mean, I'm actually going to step out in defense of this one, because think this is very old-fashioned. Like, if this had been a 1980s action flick, it clicks through its gears exactly the way of all of those films. I mean, you know, I wrote here in my notes that its biggest problem is that we want it to be Mission Impossible. We want this to be the character from Mission Impossible somehow. And it isn't, and he's not. And so I had that kind of really weird, oh, wait, Tom Cruise isn't quite as slick as the Ethan, is it? Ethan Hunt character in, I was going to say Ethan Hawke, but Ethan Hunt character in Mission Impossible. But essentially the movie crackles along briskly, right? I mean, it goes from plot point to plot point, and the dots are laid out like in, you know, there's nothing clever in, you know, first this happened and then this happened and then this happened, and it's all very linear, but it's kind of relaxed and fun in that regard. I really felt that the movie didn't ask too much of me as a viewer, but in return it gave me, you know, some really great set piece action sequences, and you know the characters were not particularly deep or well rounded. Everyone, you know, the young girl was the stroppy teenage girl. The female characters, the kind of I'm not a girl type female character, you know, it worked for me. It kind of just fell into place.
Well, yeah, looking at you like super.
Yeah. What film did I see?
Yeah. I want to watch the movie that Joe watched.
It's interesting. I don't know anything about this character. I almost want to read one of the books, but the movie kind of goes out, at least this particular story goes out of its way to create a family for him. You know, this is a person who notoriously does not have a family. He's a lone wolf. He just goes around like a vagabond, and it kind of pairs him with a female love interest, and it pairs him with a teenager who may or may not be his biologic daughter. And it just seems odd to kind of, you know, if there's a character which does things a particular way, which makes him unique, then why would you pair him up with things which removes that uniqueness from him? So it kind of felt strange to me, but I will not take away from the fact that the action scenes are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Almost disturbingly violent, though. There's a lot of sounds of bone crunching in this movie for a PG-13 movie. And like bone crunching again, and it was like I heard it one time and then again and again, like bone crunching. But actually, yeah, there's a lot of that. So it's good, but I don't know, it felt kind of generic to me.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Very much. I mean, that's what I mean by kind of it being an 80s type thriller, because that's exactly the kind of thing that we had, right? You know, Jean-Claude Van Damme or, an Arnold Schwarzenegger or a Sylvester Stallone. These are the type of movies and characters that they were, right? Nothing really, everything falls into place conveniently in the next scene so that they can solve the puzzle that they were trying to solve in the scene before. And so you kind of go through in this almost, you know, very linear manner. There's no depth to the plot. I'll give you that.
So clearly we didn't, none of us saw the original Jack Reacher movie, although we thought,
I will seek it out.
You know, but, and I know good movies or good scenes start with, you know, the action late and then they're supposed to end early. But I didn't even get a sense of how these two main characters found each other. And so that was kind of intriguing and confusing to me. And then I thought it's kind of interesting that there's this sidekick teenager who may or may not be his daughter. I mean, for the most part, I think this is a well-paced, well-acted Tom Cruise movie, and he is great to watch. And God bless him, he's in great shape for his age. Mm-hmm. But I think you've just said it. This didn't bring me anything new or different. And I think, frankly, all these movies are just starting to like blend for me at the moment. I'm having a really hard time with them.
Yeah, I didn't care for that. A lot of people, and I'm on Rotten Tomatoes and I'm looking at some of the other reactions from reviewers, and a lot of people seem to be moved by the movie at the end. And I've actually found that whole thing between him and Kobe Smulders and the girl who may or may not be his daughter, fairly generic. I wasn't moved. I wasn't attached to them. I didn't believe them necessarily to be a familial unit. If anything, it seemed to me a little redundant with Taken. I know I kind of had flashbacks of Taken.
Oh, that's a great point.
You know,
yeah.
At certain points. So I'm amazed that people kind of found that piece somewhat moving at the very end.
I'm going to say that I'm one of them. I mean, it's not necessarily that it was well done, but it was. You know, you asked why are they here? You know, why are they saddling this character with these type of you know personal life baggage when he so deliberately doesn't want to have that. Well, it's a plot device, right? It gives him something to fight for. It gives him a reason to care about someone other than himself. And again, it's classic kind of, right, you know, raising the stakes. So you give him something to have to deal with. And the very, you know, it's the classic kind of beats of a movie where you have, you know, the hero's journey, where what is the most difficult thing that this man has to contend with? It's having to care for somebody else and watch it. So it worked in the sense of it was all laid out there. It was no surprises where it went, and you know, I knew exactly how it was going to end. But it did kind of work for me in an emotional level, as simplistic as I am.
And the bad guy, I mean, he could have been Alan Rickman from Die Hard. You know,
I'm surprised he wasn't English speaking.
Yeah, but he was, yeah. Anyway.
Could have had an English accent.
All right.
Okay, let's go ahead and
wind this one. Okay, I can start. So, yeah, not bad, not great. If you like this sort of stuff, it's more of the same. Ugh. I think I hate scoring these days. 5 out of 10. So average. Plus, I thought it was the wrong movie.
Well, that doesn't help.
That doesn't help. I'm going to quote a particularly harsh but funny line from one of the reviewers. Will Light from The New Republic has this to say. He says, "The film has the empty sheen of a quick in-and-out cash grab. A movie insisting that it's a franchise while the audience yawns indifferently." So I think that's a little bit harsh, but I think that's about it. I've heard so much about the first movie that I really want to check it out. I will. And by that, you know, by that standard, I was quite disappointed with this one. Although it definitely has its moment. And we've all said this before. God knows Tom Cruise is a hard worker. He never phones it in. He's there 100% for every scene of every one of his movies. So that won't be a disappointment at all for a viewer. 6 out of 10.
And for me, this is just a solid action flick. It brings nothing new, nothing exciting, but it's really well paced. I found that the movie just had my interest. It moved through scene to scene, and I never found myself looking at my watch, which, you know, can happen with movies like, the one I'll pick on the movie that Yazdi loved so much last time, which was The Accountant. You know, I was looking at my watch at times in that movie, and here I never found myself, you know, feeling like I wanted to be somewhere else. It was, you know, popcorn. So doesn't quite warrant an 8. I'll give it a 7, but know that that's a really strong 7 from me. And if you like generic action movies, as do I, child of the 80s, then this is for you. Movie number 2, then, we can talk about Certain Women, perhaps.
Yes. So this is the lives of 3 women intersect in small town America, where each is imperfectly blazing a trail. This is based on stories by Maylee Malloy. And this has got an amazing cast, you know, girl power, Laura Dern, Kristen Stewart, Michelle Williams, Lily Gladstone, and Jared Harrison, James LaGrosse, amongst others. So Yazdi, you're the only one of us that's watched this. Joe and I haven't got around to watching the movie yet, but it's scoring super high on Rotten Tomatoes. Does it merit 92%?
It's not for everyone. But for those who it is for, it definitely merits 92%. And I think if you have watched any of Kelly Reichardt's movies before, if you watched Wendy and Lucy that she made with Michelle Williams a while ago, she made, what else did she make? She made
Meek's Cutoff,
again with Michelle Williams last year. She made a movie with... what's his name? She made a movie called Night Moves, exactly, with... why am I blanking out on his name? But anyway, she's been making a lot of movies. She has a very particular outlook to film. It's a very, very slowed down, very detached, you know, watch from far kind of outlook to her characters. But yet she's able to get to the core of those characters, and she's not interested necessarily in resolutions as much as to show you people at different crises in their life. For people, and it's not necessarily, sometimes it's a huge life crisis, as happens in Wendy and Lucy, but sometimes it's a, emotional crisis. Sometimes it's a financial crisis. Sometimes it's a huge moral crisis. So these are all very quiet crises that these different characters face. And she kind of lets you watch them. And she's, again, she has no interest in how it's resolved, but she wants you to show this is how people live. And the other thing that's interesting to me is all her characters are about people who we don't usually see in movies. So this particular one is based on stories written by this particular author, but it's set in a small Montana town. And the movie kind of deals with the Laura Dern character first, then it deals with the story of the Michelle Williams character, and then finally with the Kristen Stewart character. And then you realize how these characters are actually within the same geography. They may not know each other. Two of the characters happen to look at each other, but all she's trying to say is that this is how women in rural America are right now living. And this, at least that's what Certain Women is about. And by rural America, I don't mean, you know, like
Hicksville.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is a little town in Montana, but Laura Dern plays a lawyer. But, you know, there's a great line in the movie where, you know, she's trying to convince one of her clients to do things a particular way, and he just will not, he will not listen to her. And she says, you know, do you want a second opinion? I will actually go with you to get a second opinion, you know, to this other lawyer. And she goes, you know, to this other lawyer, and the other lawyer says exactly the same thing. And he says, you don't have a case. And this guy just says, oh, okay. And, you know, and that's all the movie's about. And it comments so beautifully on the fact that, you know, she's driving in the car and she just murmurs that 8 months of telling him and now it's okay.
Right.
You know, and it speaks to how women must face the situation all the time where, you know, somebody will listen to the same message from a man and believe it, but not from a woman.
Yeah, like you two.
That's what Movie Rollers is all about. That's not listening to Rashmi.
But she goes through, I think her story of, and I'm sorry, I'm rambling a lot, no, but her story of all three of them is perhaps the most plotty. It has a lot of plot because she gets involved in a hostage situation with that client. And it's quite fascinating to watch what she's going through. And I think the other thing which fascinated me about the movie is each one of these women, even though they're trying to kind of assert themselves within the surroundings they are in, each one of them are doing bad things. They're not morally perfect. They're allowed to be imperfect.
Because that's like real people.
That's
right?
Like real people. Yeah. And I love that, you know, somebody like Laura Dern refuses to play the mother's role. I mean, she's played the mother's role. I think she played it in Wild. But in this movie, she plays a very conflicted, very sexual, very driven character. And I kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Michelle Williams piece, I'm sorry, I'm rambling a lot. But the Michelle Williams piece, to me, presents the most fascinating moral challenge. And the moral challenge is this, which is that if you are negotiating something from somebody who is mentally compromised, you know, somebody who has Alzheimer's or somebody who is forgetful, and if you want something from that person, at what point are you kind of taking advantage of them?
Oh, that sounds very interesting.
Because the situation is that she is a, you know, she's a famous artist or whatever living in that little Montana town, and she loves native material. She does not like, she's building a new house and she does not want any new material. She wants material which is old, hundreds of years of old. And there's this man who lives, you know, 2 hours away, and he has the sandstone and she wants to retrieve the sandstone. But it's very obvious this man is not all there.
Right.
And so she goes and keeps meeting him and trying to secure the sandstone, and she does, but neither the audience or we are ever convinced that did she just kind of play with his head. And it's a beautiful dilemma. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that sounds, I mean, the whole thing sounds like, you know, a very, those kind of ethical and moral type questions and dilemmas that we face everywhere. I mean, you said something earlier that the movie is not for everyone. Why would you say that? Because it sounds like a great premise and sounds like something that I can see anyone being interested in.
Because it,
or is it just too slow?
It's too slow, and it goes out of its way to be very, very, very understated. So unless you are, and it, to be honest, it kind of leaves at least two of the stories just completely unresolved.
Right.
Actually, that's not fair. Only one of the stories is left unresolved. So again, it's not really interesting.
And are they vignettes?
I was just going to ask that.
They are kind of, each one is about 45 minutes each.
It's but they're a 2 hour and 15. Stories.
They're separate stories about three women who have living in the same, kind of in the same town, same little small town. And then the last story is by far, I mean, if you read any of the reviews as well, it's by far the best of the three. And it's the most difficult one, and it's the most ambiguous one. And it's the one which, I don't want to say too much about it, but it just broke my heart. And it's about this very lonely ranch hand, and she takes care of horses. She's not paid very well. She's of American Indian descent. And that's her life, is very hard work, taking care of these horses, lifting hay, cleaning the barns, etc. And on a whim, one day she decides to take a class, which is being offered in the local library. And she goes for the class, and Kristen Stewart is the teacher there. And Kristen Stewart is completely unprepared. This is a class she doesn't want to take because she has to drive 4 hours to get to this place. Anyway, and then Kristen Stewart is very tired after the after she's given this class, and she says, hey, is there a diner around her? And this girl says, I'll take you to the diner. And the two of them sit down and start talking. And like 500 Days of Summer, it's about two people who have a very ambiguous, well, not in 500 Days of Summer, the relationship is not ambiguous, but in this one, it's very ambiguous. It's almost an offhand kind of friendship, but it means a lot more to one person than the other.
Mm.
And, you know, how do you deal with something like that? Mm-hmm. And it's about this, you know, she keeps taking these classes, and then I don't want to give anything away, but yeah, it's simple, it's sweet, and it just breaks your heart. And amongst all these great actors, the finest actor in this movie is the one who plays that ranch, and it's a newcomer called Lily Gladstone, and oh, she's remarkable here. So I really like this movie. It's very slow, it's very considered, and but you come out of it having known these women.
So what's your score?
An easy 8 out of 10.
Okay, so yeah, not as high as the Rotten Tomatoes, but...
Yeah. I mean, I can see, I might see it again, and I might give it a higher rating, but the tone of her movies takes some getting used to.
Will we see any Oscar love for this one, do you think, Yasti?
I think it might be too small for that, but I would, in a heartbeat, suggest Lily Gladstone, who plays the ranch hand. And then Kristen Stewart plays Kristen Stewart, but Laura Dern is pretty good as well.
All right. Sounds good. Certain Women. Movie number three of the week is Hacksaw Ridge. So, Yasti, I think you're introducing that one.
Yes, I am. So, our long-known acquaintance, Mel Gibson, directs his latest movie called Hacksaw Ridge. And Mel Gibson, of course, has famously directed The Passion.
The
Passion of the Christ. He's directed Braveheart. He's directed Apocalypto. He's directed a movie with Jodie Foster that I can't remember now.
The Patriot
and many others. And here he is with Hacksaw Ridge. And Hacksaw Ridge is actually based on a true story of a soldier during World War II who, as a matter of principle, believed in war but did not believe in violence or didn't believe in the killing of enemy soldiers, and principally refused to take weapons or kill anybody else, and in spite of that managed to save 75 people. And that's pretty much the story of Hacksaw Ridge. I haven't seen it, but it has a pretty remarkable cast. It has
Andrew Garfield as the helm.
Oh, it has Andrew Garfield, Teresa Palmer. It has Sam Worthington, Rachel Griffiths, and the wonderful Hugo Weaving, who we just saw in The Dressmaker. So is this a comeback for Gibson?
Yeah, I mean, the posters say from the director of Passion of the Christ and Braveheart. I'm so happy that Mel Gibson is now back behind the camera, because when he's on, he brings it. This is an amazing movie that not only moved me, but got under my skin. This is a combination of superb acting and great direction that puts you in the heart of a war. To say it's electrifying is a strange thing to say, because it's about war and there's a high body count, but it is. It's pretty electrifying. I love this movie for the emotional heft that it provided in a very, very difficult genre.
You know, a couple of things. One, I'm amazed you liked it. Which is I'll get into why that is, but to the introduction you gave, Yazdi, I was not aware of any of that going into this movie, and I actually forgot the fact that this was Mel Gibson at the helm. And I feel like the movie is going to always have that little bias that comes with Mel Gibson, because he is a director of a certain style and nature, and I think he's very bold in the choices he makes. And you know, he's also a controversial character. And I think so, you know, the movie, you know, that doesn't necessarily do him any favors in the industry and in kind of in the press in general. But, you know, he has made one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time, which is Braveheart. I that movie is as close to perfect as any movie can get from my perspective. So I'm glad I didn't know that while watching it. And it all fell into place, obviously, as the movie unveiled itself. For the first third of the movie, I found myself thinking, silly man. You know, it was kind of an interesting story in that this is about a principled person, but the movie isn't well written enough in terms of its dialogue to kind of convey just why this man is as principled as he is. I think the story, he ends up looking stubborn, not principled, and I kind of found myself thinking, you know, just give it up. Just don't be so ridiculous. Which is the wrong sentiment to kind of have in that first third of the movie. But then the movie opens up into kind of something else that I wasn't expecting. And it's a very well done battle scene. Some of the most graphic and visceral and violent scenes that I can recall ever seeing in a movie. Gibson does battle very well. I mean, you remember the scenes in Braveheart with the clashing of men and the, you know, the body parts flying, and it's combat as it would have been on the field. And I think that would be kind of off-putting to some. You know, I struggled with the movie in a lot of ways in that I think, you know, it's ostensibly anti-war, but it kind of isn't really, because it revels in the violence of it all. So it's kind of confusing, and then, you know, some will find the religious aspects of it kind of off-putting, but again, I think it's kind of even-handed in that regard. I think it's, you know, Rashmi, I don't know how you felt these particular themes come through, but overall, I thought this was great. I mean, you know, I sound like I've been knocking it because it has many, many flaws, but overall, this is very, very effective.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with any of the things that you said, Joe, because there's this one line in the movie and it says, "What do you do when your values are under attack?" And that's both at the micro level in terms of the main protagonist, Andrew Garfield, who, you know, basically is opposed to killing yet signs up to fight in the war, right? That's a great premise within itself. Mm-hmm. But what do you do when your values are under attack? At the macro level, it's also about an American population's reaction to being bombed by Japan. And so for me, I feel like it's come at a good time, right? This movie, if you look at the inference of the political climate we're in at the moment, I don't want to get on a political soapbox, then it makes it very relevant. This makes this a very relevant movie just in that one line. What do you do when your values are under attack? And that therefore makes it a very meaningful movie for me. So I could wrap all of the other pieces into that one statement in a sense, and really took that away from the movie. So I think that the other thing that really impressed me about this movie was it's difficult to do humor in a difficult topic like war, right? It's difficult to bring humor in any way because it can come off as a cheap shot. But the introduction of Vince Vaughn...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Vince Vaughn is in it too. Yeah.
In the character that he's playing, brings so much comic relief at the time when you need it, and it makes it more. Just having that one character, for me, makes it a bit more of a multidimensional film. And so then, because we've got this depth, this emotional depth, this great message that everything's playing into, the flashbacks in Andrew Garfield's character, that we get to see why he is the way he is and why he believes so strongly in either his faith or not killing, makes for a perfect movie. And then it makes it easier for me then to bear the gory guts and the killing that this literally becomes. I mean, this is literally, you are in the middle of a war.
Yeah.
For a long part of the movie, for a good that good last third.
Yeah, no, I mean, yes, I agree. I think the Vince Vaughn character is interesting because at first he seemed kind of miscast as a drill sergeant.
Yeah.
Vince Vaughn has always got this kind of underlying smirk.
Yes.
That makes you, you know, when he's kind of being a drill sergeant,
yeah.
he doesn't have the character presence to sound like he's bossy and for you to take him seriously in the way that you would a drill sergeant. But the choice becomes very clear later on in the movie when a lot more is required of that character, and you begin to see aspects of that character that make you think of him in a very different way. And so, you know, very inspired choice there. The battlefield scenes are also interesting. And I think, you know, the one thing that I think a lot of people will struggle with here is that there's, I think, and maybe it's just my own perception of it, but there seems to be this kind of almost divine intervention type sense that this man is, you know, protected from above in the things that he is able to do and achieve. And honestly, the fact that this is a true story, the fact that it's based on they have, you know, interviews, you know, they do the thing at the end where they show you the real people and some you know, interviews and clips with them. It just makes it so much more remarkable what this is. So I think, you know, your own personal bias about religion and spirituality will affect the way that you particularly interpret those scenes. But it's just very well done. And I think, you know, my only issues with this is I feel like if it had had the same kind of dialogue writing talent behind it that Braveheart had, this could have been as effective as a movie like that, because it had all the elements in there, you know, that movie did. But I feel like it was just a little bit clunky, and I felt early on in particular it was kind of low budget. It was only that when we got to the war scenes that you kind of got to see where they spent the money. And again, these kind of things are kind of jarring for me as a viewer, because they detract from, you know, where the story is trying to take you when you can see that there's this kind of odd disparity between, you know, clunkiness of dialogue and then some very well executed direction. So I liked it a lot, an awful lot.
I mean, I'm really eager to see it now, based on what you both have said. I mean, I think the better war movies are the ones which will kind of confirm your position on war, no matter which side which side of the spectrum you sit on. So it seems like this movie does the same in terms of, you know, how you might believe with spirituality, with faith, or, you know, all of that. So I think that's great.
And
go on.
Sorry, just one point. I mean, yes, you said when we were reviewing The Magnificent Seven that you really despised the fact that movie equated heroism with violence. And this movie does the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. And I think it's beautiful in that regard, in that there is violence everywhere in this movie. But the most heroic moments come from those times when, you know, guns aren't being pointed, and or maybe they are, but they're, you know, it's just the fact that the what makes these characters as strong and as beautifully crafted as they are is the fact that, you know, they don't prevail by blowing people up.
Yeah, and I think often, you know, we've watched many movies about principled people who change the world. And I think what really came across to me is that here is someone who is so principled that he actually gets abused for his principle and his values. And yet he is the one person who makes the most change and impact to those around him. And those are always inspiring stories. And so I think to the one point, Joan, I won't go on about this too much more, the spirituality. The reason I think I could connect with it is not necessarily because there's a divinity watching over him. I think he believes so strongly in his faith. And so it's that his own belief that propels him forward. And so I think that's a very good message too, right? It doesn't matter what happens around you. It's really what you believe you can do.
And the only reason I made that point is I think in lesser hands, this movie could have come across as if, you know, imagine this had been made by, and you know, Gibson is notoriously, you know, kind of Christian in his beliefs and, you know,
super religious.
And I think he had to kind of dial himself back in the sense of, you know, this man was carried along through the force of prayer, you know, and it was, it could have very easily gone to that place.
Yeah, and it didn't. It doesn't.
And I think the way that I received it is that it deftly kind of straddled that line, but never went over it.
Yeah. I'm definitely thinking some Oscar love for Andrew Garfield. I think he was amazing in this performance. And Mel Gibson. I think this was really, really good direction. Just for the war scenes at the last third are just incredibly done. They're very real. And, you know, not that I advocate watching people being shot, but the whole thing is, it's epic.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Andrew Garfield because we haven't seen him in much in almost 2 years. And now suddenly, I think it's just a coincidence, but he's headlining two very big movies. One is the Mel Gibson-directed Hacksaw Ridge, and the other one is the Martin Scorsese-directed Silence, which also opens in a month's time. So
he's a remarkable actor.
Yeah, he's a very...
I think his worst stuff is probably the Spider-Man stuff, but everything else he's done. What was it? The Facebook movie he was in.
Never Let Me Go.
He was incredible in that.
I liked him a lot in this. I think again, the moments in the movie early on kind of detracted from, I think he did like really good work with very poor material, if that makes sense. The lines that they had, and you know, there's a romantic storyline that occurs early on in the movie. It just felt a little clunky because it was all kind of a setup. So again, I think, you know, as an actor, he did really well, but it was later on in the movie where I think he shows his depth, and he did really, really well here.
Score?
It was clunky at places, and I'm not going to forgive it for that. So with that, my 9 becomes an 8. It would have otherwise been a 9. This is really, really good. It's a really great battle movie, and it reminds me again of the moments that were so good in Braveheart, where you feel the clash of men coming together. People might have issues with the way that the Japanese are portrayed in this movie. I think it's not particularly politically correct in the moment, but then again, that was wartime, and wartime brings out certain things among soldiers, and this was portrayal of that. So yeah, very, very strong 8.
Yeah, epic, moving, important, and relevant. 8 out of 10.
Okay, I need to rush out.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I think it's worth your while.
The big screen does it justice. Okay. This is definitely one I would recommend watching on the big screen. Just the sound was amazing when we watched it. I think we watched it in IMAX.
No, we just watched it
in good sound.
In a good theater, yeah. All right, so... let us know what you think. Mail at movierollers.com, twitter.com/movierollers, facebook.com/movierollers as well. Again, it's that time of year when there are lots of things coming out, so get your butt out to see one of these or other movies. Until our next podcast, it's too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.